Live from Sun River, Oregon, the Oregon Association of Broadcasters and its member stations present the 2014 Oregon Gubernatorial Debate.
For over 70 years, the Oregon Association of Broadcasters, or the OAB, has been the voice of the broadcast industry in Oregon. We advocate for Oregonians about the importance of free television and radio before the legislature in Salem and to Congress in Washington, D.C. The OAB organizes programs and activities that encourage and promote sound broadcast practices to better serve you. And we provide scholarships for broadcast students from across the region to attract and retain emerging journalism talent in our state. Today's debate, broadcast live across the state of Oregon between Governor John Kitzhaber and Representative Dennis Richardson, is an example of the OAB's involvement in the process of helping educate the citizens of Oregon on the important issues facing them each and every day. More than 250 radio and television stations across the state welcome you to today's debate. Watch, listen, and you decide. Most importantly, vote. Now here's your moderator, Matt McDonald.
Good morning and welcome to this, the 2014 Oregon gubernatorial debate, the second time these two candidates will be meeting. I'm Matt McDonald, the evening anchor at News Channel 21, and on behalf of the Oregon Association of Broadcasters, I will be serving as your moderator today. I am proud to be saying that we have two candidates with us today. The first, Governor John Kitzhaber, a Democrat, is seeking his fourth term as governor. He was first elected in 1994, again in 1998 and 2010. Prior to serving as governor, he was the president of the Oregon Senate and is a physician by training. His Republican challenger, Dennis Richardson, has served in the Oregon House since 2002, representing District 4. That includes parts of Jackson and Josephine counties. He's a retired attorney, business owner, and a Vietnam War veteran. Both of these candidates have agreed to a set forum for this debate. Each candidate will have 2 minutes for opening remarks and 3 minutes apiece for closing. Questions have been submitted by Oregon Association of Broadcasters members, and they've been vetted by an OAB committee. Candidates will have 1 minute for a response. The candidate that answers first will also get a 30-second rebuttal period. As the moderator, it'll be at my discretion to ask for 30-second follow-up questions if we need to clarify any points. By virtue of a coin toss, the order for opening remarks as well as questions has already been set. At this time, Representative Richardson, you have 2 minutes for your opening remarks.
Hello, I'm Dennis Richardson. I'm the Republican and independent candidate for Oregon governor. I think I should start by telling you a little bit about who I am. I'm the son of a carpenter, a union man who taught me how to work hard and not quit until the job is done. I learned from the example of President John Kennedy when I was young about the importance and the honor of military service. So when I was old enough, I joined the Army. I flew helicopters in Vietnam, primarily Nighthawk and single ship missions. After returning home, I was lost. And then I met Kathy, who helped me find new purpose for my life. Kathy's here with me today, and after 41 years of marriage, we continue to grow closer every year. We have one son and eight daughters, so we know how to keep at it and work through hard times. I served on the city council and then was elected in 2002 to become a legislator in the Oregon House of Representatives. While there, I was unanimously elected by the Democrats and Republicans to serve as both, to serve as the Speaker Pro Tem, and then I became the co-chair of Ways and Means, where I was able to work across the aisle to balance a budget in very difficult times without raising taxes. I'm here today to ask for you to give me the opportunity to serve as Oregon's next governor. And this isn't about a Republican versus a Democrat. It's about the past versus the future. The governor served for three terms of high unemployment, low school achievement, and continuing growing distrust in state government because of the radical abuse of our federal funds and our state funds in both the Cover Oregon and the Columbia River Crossing project debacles. Oregon deserves a governor who will reboot Oregon and who will restore our economy, our education system, and be able to help restore trust and confidence to the Oregon people. I will be that governor.
Representative Richardson, thank you very much. Governor Kitzhaber, 2 minutes for your opening remarks.
First, let me thank the UAB for sponsoring this debate. Thank you very much. My political career has been built around one basic belief, and that is that all of us want the same things. We all want to be able to meet our basic needs and those of our families. We want to strive to meet our full potential. We want hard work to be rewarded with a better life, and we want to leave our kids better off than we are. Now, there are two basic ways to approach that. One is based on the belief that people are pretty much on their own and need to fend for themselves. And if you make it and you're lucky, great. If you don't, you don't make it. The other belief is based on the assumption that we're actually all in this together and that there are some things we can actually do as a community, as a society, and as a state to lift us all up. And I mean all of us, regardless of race, income, gender, or sexual orientation. I believe in the second view, and I fought for it my entire life. As an ER doctor, as a legislator, as a governor, and I fight for it every day as a father. It's why I ran in 2010. It's why I'm running again now. Now, remember the dire straits we were in 4 years ago. Polarized state, high unemployment, divided legislature, big budget deficit, the ingredients most people felt would lead to the kind of chaos we saw in Wisconsin. And the fact that it didn't reflects the kind of executive leadership that we needed 4 years ago and still need today. I saw an opportunity here, but we had to throw away the political playbook, reach across the partisan divide, and take seriously the problems that faced us. And that's exactly what we did, and we've been doing that together for the last 4 years. In 2001, we erased that budget deficit with bipartisan support. A year ago, we came into a special session as the federal government was closing down to raise revenue for schools and to provide small business relief, and we did that with bipartisan votes. Earlier this year, I negotiated personally a stand-down between business and labor to avoid another set of divisive ballot measures. So here we are with an open playing field ahead of us. We've tackled some tough problems over the last 4 years, but we didn't tear the state apart because we did it together. And I'm looking forward today to a serious discussion of the serious problems that still face us and how we seek to achieve them.
Governor Kitzhaber, thank you. We'll move on to questions now. And being a news guy, I always like to follow the things that are happening in the moment. So let me set the stage for this first question. Over the past week, the Secretary of State's office has said it will be fining the Richardson campaign $365 for missing two deadlines to report in-kind contributions. Meanwhile, a story has come out in one of the Portland media outlets that the Kitzhaber campaign is facing some accusations. It has not reported the in-kind work of a political consultant. The question, and we'll begin with you, Governor Kitzhaber, how will you assure Oregonians that your administration will operate in an ethical manner?
Well, I've got a pretty long political career of operating in an ethical manner. I've never had any ethics charges filed against me, except during a campaign, of course, which seems to be routine these days. As regards to Patricia McCaig, we have reported her activities according to the rule, and that will all be available on the Secretary of State's website on September 30th. You know, I think that in this day and age, with the level of media scrutiny that is brought to anyone in public office, we're all pretty transparent, and I've got a pretty long career of transparency, and I'm more than happy to discuss that at any time in any place.
All right, Governor, thank you. Representative Richardson, I'll repeat the question part of that. How will you assure Oregonians that your administration will operate in an ethical manner?
The Secretary of State's office has challenged us because we're living in Portland with a friend, and they said we didn't say that the friend has given us an in-kind contribution. They don't charge rent, but we're going to comply with that because we want to comply with the law. But what we've seen with the Patricia McCaig scandal is outrageous. Here's a woman who was working for the governor, who was on his staff, who was giving him counsel and advice about the Columbia River Crossing Bridge project, and at the same time, she's getting $554,000 of pay from the primary contractor on the project. I think that's criminal. I think it's certainly unethical. Can you imagine being an advisor to the governor while you're collecting $500,000 from the contractor who's supposed to be building a bridge, and yet we never dug a single shovelful of dirt on that bridge?
Governor Kitzhaber, you have 30 seconds to respond.
Yeah, you know, I think the reason people attack Patricia McCaig is that she's effective. When she shows up, things happen. She's also a powerful woman, and some people are uncomfortable, apparently, with powerful women in this day and age. She's been a value add on the CRC. She's been a valued friend and consultant over the years. I respect her greatly, and we'll continue to seek her advice when it's appropriate.
All right, gentlemen, thank you. We'll move on to our second question. Representative Richardson, we'll start with you on this one. Lawsuits, technical failures, and on the line, the health care coverage for Oregon citizens. How will you end the Cover Oregon debacle and ensure the state does not have similar problems on future IT projects?
Thank you for asking this question. Cover Oregon is a case study in fraud, waste, and abuse. We've wasted $300 million on a website project. The governor's going to say that we've signed up all of these people under Cover Oregon for health care. But the truth is, most of them would have been signed up under Medicaid anyway. He'll say that we've provided all this coverage, but in reality, we've got almost 100,000 individuals who now have to be re-enrolled by the federal government. That is a waste of our time, effort, and money. We can't let that happen again, and the way you avoid it is by being connected. The governor was in Bhutan learning about gross national happiness while we were in session trying to figure out how to implement Cover Oregon. The way you stop these things from happening again is to have a governor who will pay attention, who will be on the job, who will work, who shows up. I'll be that governor.
Representative Richardson, thank you. 1 minute for you. Governor Kitzhaber, how will you end the Cover Oregon debacle and ensure the state does not have similar problems on future IT projects?
Yeah, I'll actually try to answer the question. Our chief information officer, Alex Pettit, has instituted a number of steps to address exactly that. One is called an IT enterprise governance structure that assigns responsibility for each IT project on the front end. So if problems occur, you don't end up pointing fingers after the fact if the project doesn't come off. The second one is what's called the stage gate process, where each project has to go through a stage gate where we look at its progress, and it cannot get the next round of funding until it clears that step. We've instituted this throughout the state. And with regards to Cover Oregon specifically, it will deliver a functional website in November. We have only 5% of Oregonians who don't have health insurance coverage today because we kept our eye on the ball, which was enrollment, and the remaining functions will be moved to a state agency after November to ensure more accountability.
All right. Governor, thank you. Representative Richardson, you have 30 seconds to respond.
It's great to keep your eye on the ball, but what we really need is to keep our eye on the money. We have $300 million wasted on this project. Back in the governor's, in the 1990s, early on, he was helped and was involved in the Department of Motor Vehicles fiasco where we lost $75 million. Now it's $300 million. It's $190 million on the CRC project. It's $72 million on the most recently announced Department of Human Services failure in their modernization project. The way you solve this is we have leadership that will pay attention, who will see that we do not have projects that are just started and then continued without oversight.
Thank you. Question three, Governor Kitzhaber, we'll begin with you. Recreational marijuana recently became legal in Washington and Colorado. It is on the ballot here in Oregon. If pot is legalized here in Oregon, do you favor allowing individual communities having the right to ban marijuana-related businesses?
You know, I think we need a statewide policy on marijuana. I don't support the ballot measure, not because I have anything against marijuana. I'm very concerned that we don't know enough and don't have in place the kind of public safety, law enforcement, and educational framework for it to work. We've got Colorado and California. It seems to me it would make more sense to wait a couple of years and learn from their experience and put in that kind of framework in advance. I think it's very difficult to do that once the bill is passed. And the time to have a thoughtful discussion about the question of local preemption is before the bill passes. So, again, it's my hope that we are afforded the opportunity in this state to get ahead of the curve. I think it's coming. I think it's inevitable. But I think we could be better prepared and better serve the people and the interests both of those who advocate it and those who are concerned about it by taking the time to put a responsible framework in place.
Governor, thank you. Representative Richardson, I'll repeat the question. If pot is legalized here in Oregon, do you favor allowing individual communities having the right to ban recreational marijuana businesses?
I firmly believe that the best government is that which is closest to the people, and I see no moving interest why the state should determine whether or not a local community should have pot or not have pot. So I think local control is a rational way to approach it. I agree with the governor that we should delay, if we could, implementing the law in Oregon until we see what has really taken place in Washington and Colorado. I mean, we can learn from their mistakes and their successes, and that will make for a better program in Oregon. Regardless, once the voters speak, I will take an oath to support the will of the people, and I will assure that that happens because that's the oath that I take. A governor takes an oath to honor and obey and enforce the Constitution and the will of the people. And while our governor has chosen not to do that in the area of capital punishment, when it comes to the marijuana enforcement and implementation of that law, I will see that that is done.
Governor Kitzhaber, you have 30 seconds to respond.
I'll waive it.
We'll stick with there. We found some common ground, a rarity here in politics. Thank you, gentlemen, for your candor. Representative Richardson, the next question will begin with you. What would you do differently immediately to improve high school graduation rates in our state? And please be specific.
Oregon's education system is second to last in the nation in graduation rates. We have the highest rate of non-attendance, absenteeism. We cannot afford to lose another generation. We can have promises made, but promises are broken, and we won't bring in another Rudy Crew to come and waste a year of our time and waste another year of the lives of our student. What I will do is, first, we need to ensure that education is funded first and not last. Too often, it is a political football in the budgeting process where the kids are they're forced to suffer and the school districts do not have the ability to make their plans. So we should fund education first. Secondly, we should use common sense and not just common core. We don't need to have the federal government and bureaucrats telling us what's best for our schools. We need to have local control wherever possible. We should listen to our teachers, to our parents, and to school districts because they know what's best for our students. We need to make sure that we have common sense in our schools and that our teachers are allowed to teach.
Representative, thank you. Governor Kitzhaber, the same question to you. What would you do differently to immediately improve high school graduation rates in our state?
Well, we've already started over the last 4 years. This is not going to happen overnight, largely because we have viewed education as a set of silos and pretty much viewed kids as non-existent until they get to kindergarten. The fact is we lose a whole lot of them before they ever get there. So we have a laser focus on outcomes for kids, kindergarten readiness, and third grade reading. You're four times more likely to graduate if you're reading at level in third grade. The second step, which we're beginning to implement now, is to reconnect kids in high school, actually in middle school, to college and career through reconnecting them to career and technical education, reconnecting them to computer science to give them the ability to be pulled through school rather than being pushed through. So those things, if we're able to continue to fund those, will make a huge difference. Simply funding schools first begs the question of what system you're funding. It's a political trick, and it leaves out the ability to ask whether you're actually funding the social services and wraparound services that kids need to actually be successful at home and in the classroom.
All right, Governor, thank you. Representative Richardson, you have 30 seconds to respond.
The question is about high school graduation rates. What we need to do is to focus on the outcomes that we want, and you can't just have more of the same. Our students need a mentor and an opportunity, especially with a breakdown in family. Every child deserves a mentor, opportunity. We need to look at charter schools. We need to look at alternatives because not all of our kids are going to go to college. Every student deserves an equal educational opportunity, and we can do that if we focus on the needs of all of our students and not just those that are heading to college.
Thank you. We'll move on to our next question now. Governor Kitzhaber, this is directed to you first. In 2015, Oregon's minimum wage will be $9.25 an hour. In your view, should it be higher, stay the same, and why? Or stay the same, I should say, and why?
Let's remember that Oregon was the first state to institute a minimum wage in 1913, so this has been a core value of Oregon for over a century. I do believe the minimum wage should be higher. I'm not sure what. I don't think it should be 15, but I could see it at 11 or so. I think the real point, though, is simply raising the minimum wage by itself doesn't solve the problem because there's a benefit cliff where your income goes up and support services like daycare start to fall off. So today, if you move from $9 an hour to $13 an hour, you actually have less money in your pocket. So moving up the minimum wage is very important. No one can live on the minimum wage today. And many of those people require social services to support them. So we should raise the minimum wage, but we have to address that income cliff so work actually pays, so that when you get a minimum wage increase, whether it's under our current system or not, you actually end up with more money in your pocket. Make work pay. That ought to be our objective, and giving people the ability to take care of themselves and their families.
Governor, thank you. Representative Richardson, I'll repeat the question. In 2015, Oregon's minimum wage will be $9.25 an hour. In your view, should it be higher or stay the same, and why?
In focusing on the minimum wage, it's important to know that I think Oregon presently has the second highest in the country, and it's indexed with inflation, which is something that many other states do not have. We need to focus on the fact that a minimum wage is supposed to be an entry wage. We should not be just looking at how we're going to be able to raise the minimum wage. What we need are more jobs, family wage paying jobs in our state. And that requires us to focus on those things, the barriers that prevent us from having good jobs in Oregon. I want very much for us to expand our gross domestic product, because when there's greater demand for our products and services, that creates more desire for those products and that creates jobs. Minimum wage is an entry-level wage. We need to provide more jobs that will allow people to raise their families and pay their mortgages and have a future here in Oregon.
Okay, Governor Kitzhaber, you have 30 seconds to respond to that.
Just growing the economy doesn't help people at the bottom. We have the second fastest growing economy in the nation the last couple of years, and most of those jobs are flat out on the bottom, people trapped at a minimum wage job with no way up and no way out. No one can live on the minimum wage. You try to take care of a family on $18,000 or $19,000 a year, and it is impossible to do. If we care about each other, if we care about the future, we will pay people in this state a wage that allows them to take care of themselves and their families.
Governor Kitzhaber, thank you. Representative Richardson, I do want to ask a quick clarification on that question. The question was, in 2015, Oregon's minimum wage will be $9.25 an hour, and you talked about that being an entry-level wage. Could you tell me if you think it should be higher or stay the same in 2015?
I think that the minimum wage should probably stay with the same project, or the program that we have now, because it is indexed. But what we need to do is not focus on minimum wage, but focus on wages so that people can get beyond minimum wage, and that takes a vibrant economy, and after three terms, we don't have that. Our unemployment has been higher than the national average for 18 years. That's unacceptable.
Okay, thank you. Representative Richardson, the next question will begin with you. In 2013, the legislature made changes to PERS that are currently under judicial review. However, the potential unfunded liability of the system remains significant. Do you think additional PERS reforms are necessary, and what specific reforms would you make?
PERS is one of those issues that just keeps coming back, and right now we're waiting to see what the Supreme Court does with the most recent reforms. And by the way, those reforms, contrary to popular belief, did not solve the PERS problem. They merely lowered the PERS increase. The way we can deal with PERS is to determine what is contractual and what is just kind of the decision of the legislature. Not everything the legislature does is part of the employment contract. It's going to take the Supreme Court to make that determination for us. We need to maintain the contract so that our civil servants can live their lives and count on having a funded retirement plan. And to do that, though, we need to solve once and for all what is contractual, what isn't, make the reforms if it's not contractual, and honor the contract that we have to our retirees and our dedicated public servants.
Thank you, Governor Kitzhaber. I'll repeat the question part of that. Do you think PERS, additional PERS reforms are necessary, and what specific reforms would you make?
The answer to the question is no. We need to remember that these benefits were earned by these people. Often they were accepted in lieu of pay increases. However, because of the market crash and the loss of the fund, the cost of the unfunded liability was taking dollars out of the classroom, making it hard to fund public services. So I led our state into a special session, rather difficult to do from someone from my party, and addressed the issue in a fair and responsible way. I believe we have a strong case to win at the Supreme Court, and I think that we have made a big dent in the unfunded liability, and we need to move on to other things, like raising the minimum wage, like ensuring that we reduce income inequality in this state. We've got hardworking public employees. They've done their share. They have taken a reduction in the public in the PERS system, and now it's time to move on to some other issues.
Representative Richardson, you have 30 seconds to respond.
Thank you. We talk about the PERS crisis that we have, and it continues to be a plague to our state, but what isn't discussed is the problems with PERS came about during John Kitzhaber's term as the president of the Senate and the legislature. He created the problem, and now we're left to try and solve it. We shouldn't have had it to begin with, but now we're stuck with it, and we don't need four more years of excuses and blame.
Governor Kitzhaber, next question will begin with you. What are the fundamental problems with Oregon's tax structure, and as governor, what would you change?
the fundamental problem with our tax structure. It's very, very narrow and relies almost completely on personal and corporate income taxes. I have in the past favored a consumption tax. It's very clear that that's not going to happen. So the question is, if we can't add that third leg, what can we do within the tax structure itself to make it more rational? And there are two things. On the bottom end, I referred to it earlier, fix the benefit cliff so that when people get more money in their paycheck, they get more money in their pocket to spend in the economy and to take care of themselves and their families. At the top end, we know that most of our job growth comes from small businesses that are growing rapidly. Currently, many of those small businesses, when they get big enough to have a liquidity event, they essentially leave the state. So a targeted capital gains tax reduction for reinvestment of those resources in the state of Oregon would be the second part of a reform package that I would support.
Governor, thank you. Representative Richardson, what are the fundamental problems with Oregon's tax structure? And as governor, what would you change?
One of the fundamental problems with our tax structure is that there's never enough money. With government, you have an addict, and the drug of choice is money. And so when you have the cycle of boom and bust, you know, recession and improvement in economies, we always spend everything that we've got. And then when we have the inevitable reduction, the recession, there's never enough money. And so we end up having to lay off teachers, cut school days. When it comes to our tax structure, we have what we have. And there's not going to be a change in that until the people decide to do that. We can look at other states and see what works and what doesn't work. We can learn from the experiences of those states that have a growing and a vibrant economy because they have incentives that attract business and attract growth. Right now, what we have is barriers and a tax structure which has a negative impact on growth. And so we have high unemployment and low development of innovators and entrepreneurs and inventors in our state.
Governor Kitzhaber, would you like 30 seconds to respond?
Well, I'm not quite sure what his answer was, but I'll add that because of the changes we made in Medicaid, 1 million people now are on a care model that's growing at much less than inflation. We've added state employees. If we had school teachers as well, by the 21-23 biennium, we will have cut general fund expenditures by $4 billion. We will have eliminated the structural budget deficit that we've had since Measure 5 by the 2019 biennium. So that's a part of tax reform, basically. There's two sides to the equation, how you raise it and how you spend it. We're addressing both of those.
Governor, thank you. Gentlemen, we'll return to the topic of health care, though I won't be saying the words cover Oregon in this question. Representative Richardson.
Maybe in the answers, though.
Well, that's up to you guys. Representative Richardson, we'll start with you. There is a shortage of primary care physicians that are providing vital care to patients throughout Oregon and not just in rural communities. How can we reverse the trend and increase the number of general practitioners in our state?
We're going to have to change the model, not merely getting more practitioners. What we really need to do is turn to a team approach where you have doctors that are working at the top of their license. And then you have nurse practitioners, and you have physician's assistants, and you have those that are willing to make contact, have good people skills, and they follow with chronically ill patients to make sure they're doing their meds, that they're doing blood tests, and that they don't just keep showing up in emergency rooms. Unless we change the way that we do business in medicine, we're not going to change the outcomes that we have. In addition, we need to have incentives for patients to be consumers. Right now, when you're a patient, you go in, and it's like going to have a menu at a restaurant, and there's no prices. Yeah, I think I'll take steak and lobster. What we need to do is come up with a system also, and I have a plan on how we can do this, where there is an incentive for the patients to ask the question as to why I need to have this MRI, why is it $450 here and $1,200 across town, and what about prescription drugs, high cost or generic? We need to have incentives for the patients to be involved in their own care.
Representative, thank you. Governor Kitzhaber, I'll repeat that again. How can we reverse the trend, this referring to a lack of primary care physicians, and increase the number of general practitioners in our state?
I would substantially agree with Representative's analysis, and that's exactly what we've done with our coordinated care organizations, in which 1 million people enrolled out of a state of 4 million people. Essentially, we are using a team approach with a physician at the top doing what he or she can only do because of their training. Physician assistants, nurse practitioners, we're focusing on prevention, wellness, and the community-based management of chronic conditions where the vast majority of costs are. And that does spread your providers an awful lot further. So this model is not only reducing costs, it's producing remarkably positive health outcomes for people in the state of Oregon. And we intend to move this not only to PEB and OEB, but to the private sector, which could be an absolute game changer for businesses in this state. If their health care costs were going at 3.4%, it frees up massive amounts of money for reinvestment in human resources and plant and equipment. So this is a huge success story, and we're leading the nation here in redefining and changing our model for delivering health care. Very exciting.
Governor Kitzhaber, thank you. Would you like 30 seconds to respond, Representative Richardson?
Yes, just to continue this joint discussion, because we're in agreement on how we can approach this. We need to ensure that the community care model does what it's intended to do, and that is not just how you spend money differently and act like a managed care organization, but actually work with individuals, help them to see the importance of changing lifestyles. And I mean, if we can help people lessen their smoking, and lessen the obesity problems, lessen their dependence on drugs, we can help them not only have a better life, but also have lower expenses that will help the whole system.
Thank you. It's refreshing to see some agreement here during campaign season. Governor Kitzhaber, we'll start with you on this next question. Senator Ron Wyden has sponsored a bill to double the timber harvest on ONC forest land in Oregon. Some groups would say it will allow too much logging. Others will say not enough. Where do you stand?
Well, probably right in between them. I mean, everyone's going to be upset with this bill. I had a conference call with the senator and Representative DeFazio last week. We're getting a new bill draft this week, and we propose to meet again the week after that. There is a pathway here to allow responsible increase in harvest on those ONC lands that still provides a significant conservation lift. It's not impossible. The issues really are not the board fee as much to me as the certainty that whatever board foot level is arrived at, you can count on, and that we then bring some revenue into the counties that they can also count on. So, you know, this isn't about gutting the Endangered Species Act. This isn't about rolling back environmental laws. It's stepping back and asking ourselves, can't we do a better job finding a pathway to get more value off of that specific 2 million acres of land in Southwest Oregon that certainly needs it, and manage that in a way that dramatically improves the conservation value and gain that we can get from those resources.
Governor, thank you. Representative Richardson, this again about Senator Ron Wyden's bill to double the timber harvest on ONC forest land in Oregon. Where do you stand as far as it being enough or too much harvest in our forest land?
I think the bill is flawed because, once again, it does not give the certainty that the timber industry needs. We've lost over 100 mills in recent decades, and what do we have to show for it? Promises, discussion, and occasionally payments from the federal government. What we need is to be able to count on there being certain timber that can be utilized by our mills. Oregon is a natural resource-based state, and yet in our rural communities especially, we have them languishing in depression because they can't utilize the timber. What we need is a governor who will be back in Washington, D.C., who will lead a delegation of other Western governors and bring our case to not only the Congress and the President, but to national media to show that we cannot allow citizens, Americans in Oregon, to be languishing in poverty and in depression when our other Americans don't even know about it in the East. We're all Americans. We need a governor who will bring this to the people and not settle for just more talk by senators or by our representatives.
Representative, thank you. Governor Kitzhaber, 30 seconds to respond.
Yeah, actually, we're doing a lot of those things. In Eastern Oregon, the Blue Mountain Partnership has a 10-year stewardship agreement and timber supply that has kept the last mill in John Day open and adding jobs, and has fed the mill, the Boise Cascade Mill in LeGrand, which is actually adding jobs. So the point is, there are creative things we can do to find that middle ground that improves the economy, improves the health of the forest, and keeps people back to work in the woods. We've done it in Eastern Oregon. We saved the last mill in your district, Rough and Ready, by finding a creative way to get a timber supply, and we're going to continue to lean on that issue, and we're going to make it work.
Governor, thank you. Representative Richardson, should undocumented immigrants have driving privileges in Oregon as allowed under ballot measure 88, and why?
This is a very sensitive question because it affects lives, and the decisions that are made on this, you know, it really does have an impact on families and their abilities to attend things, you know, to have transportation. So I take it very seriously. I think it's a mistake, though, for us to grant those driving privileges because we can learn from the experiences of other jurisdictions. Tennessee had this kind of a program, and they repealed it because they had busloads of illegal residents, immigrants that were coming to Tennessee so that they could get that governor, that government card. In New Mexico, the governor, Susana Martinez, has said if she had the power to repeal it in New Mexico, she would repeal it for the same reason, that they have a certain number of immigrants in their boundaries of their state, but they've they've issued cards that are much more than the number that they have in the state. We need to learn from the experience of others. Driving is not a right, it's a privilege. I mean, I've got a bunch of teenagers. I understand that it is a privilege and not a right.
Thank you. Governor Kitzhaber, I'll repeat the question. Should undocumented immigrants have driving privileges in Oregon as allowed under ballot measure 88, and why?
Absolutely, yes. First of all, it reduces the number of uninsured and unlicensed people on the road, so there's a safety issue here. But this is large, part of a much larger commitment to equity and opportunity in this state. These people are working in Oregon. They're paying taxes in Oregon. They're the backbone of our nursery industry. They're the backbone of a huge part of our agricultural industry. They're contributing to the state. They're hard workers. They deserve the right to be able to legally drive to and from work, to and from church, take their kids to school. If this is a nation that believes in equity and opportunity, that we were all created equal, that we all have certain rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, then surely the pursuit of happiness must include the ability to drive to work and to take care of your family. So to me, this is an issue of fundamental equity and equality, and I believe very deeply that we should allow these individuals to be able to drive.
Governor, thank you. Representative Richardson, you have 30 seconds to respond.
Well, I appreciate the governor's passion, but the Declaration of Independence was not dealing with illegal immigrants that are in our state and are here breaking the law. This is not an easy discussion. It's not an easy issue. But ultimately, you have to have certain principles. Either we enforce the law and we live with the law, or we make special exceptions for special people. We've got a problem. It's the federal government's problem, and that is on the border. But we have to live with what we have here. We have to make a decision. Do we allow people to have special rights merely because our hearts reach out to them, or do we have a law where we enforce the laws for everyone? That's where we're at, and I believe that that's where we need to remain.
Representative, thank you. Governor, we'll start with you on this question. Should Oregon employers provide paid sick leave to all workers, including part-time employees? Why or why not?
I also believe in a state in a paid sick leave policy. It needs to be a statewide policy, not a city or county by county policy. And obviously, it has to work for small businesses, and we have to make sure that it doesn't result in other benefits simply being dropped. But the fact of the matter is, if you are a low-income worker in this state, you have absolutely no margin. If you have to leave to go to the doctor, if you get sick, let's say they're on minimum wage, our great minimum wage, they're making $18,000, $19,000 a year, and they get sick. That can devastate them. If they're working at a fast food restaurant, they can lose their job. What happens then? Well, they come on to the state welfare system and get public supports. It's a system that doesn't make any sense. Paid sick leave is a rational human response to how we support people in our labor force, particularly people at the low end trying to move up.
Governor, thank you. Representative Richardson, should Oregon employers provide paid sick leave to all workers, including part-time employees? Why or why not?
Yes, I believe they should, but the difference between our viewpoint is I don't believe it's the government's place to make a mandate, to pass a law, and to punish people with the threat of either confiscation or imprisonment for not keeping a law as determined by the government. I think that it's what employers should do. I did that as an employer myself, and I've done that for years in various businesses in which I've been involved. I think it's an important thing for us to do. I think there needs to be training, there needs to be publicity about it, but that we cross the line when we say the government is going to pass a law and threaten people if they don't comply with the way that the government thinks something ought to be done.
Governor, 30-second response.
Yes.
We'll pass on that one. Okay. Representative Richardson, this one starts with you. What is the state's role when counties or school districts, for example, are unable or unwilling to fund things that are mandated by the state legislature?
It's a huge problem. I mean, one of the reasons that I ran for the House was I was on a city council, and I talked to the other city council members because we kept getting mandates from the state on what to do with the building department, and they would tell us how to be better, but they wouldn't give us the money to do it. I think it's a huge mistake for us to allow the government at any level to give mandates and not show how it's going to be funded. I believe that the government, especially the state government, should be a resource to local and county government and not a dictator. I think that we have room to improve in that, and that we should ensure that we're not giving mandates that they can't afford to enforce.
Governor Kitzhaber, I'll repeat that for you. What is the state's role when counties or school districts are unable or unwilling to fund things that are mandated by the state legislature?
I think there's two parts to the answer. First is unable. I do agree with Representative Richardson that we need to be very careful about mandating things on other segments of a government that clearly they can't pay for. It doesn't make a lot of sense. So we need to look at that and continue to look at that. I think the larger question is when people are unwilling. And what we have in parts of Southern Oregon right now is a true public safety crisis where one of the lowest property tax rates in the state, people are unwilling to raise those rates to fund basic law enforcement. There is really no law enforcement in Josephine County anymore. It's a very, very dangerous situation. We've passed legislation to try to address that, or that we can levy some increase matched by the legislature should the county commission request it of the legislature. That hasn't happened yet. Our options are basically to send the state police in, but at some point you have to ask, should the rest of the state be essentially supporting the public safety services for counties that are simply unwilling to pay for it themselves? There's no easy answer to this one, but this is going to not just affect that county. It's coming to Lane County. It's coming to Curry County. It's coming to Coos County. And it's an issue we have to take very seriously and try to address.
Governor, thank you. Representative Richardson, 30 seconds to respond.
The reason that counties are not able to pay the expenses of law enforcement, such as in Josephine County, it goes back to our policy on timber. You have a county that has some 60% of its land controlled in timber, and they can't cut. They can't develop their economy. They don't have the clusters that we have up in the northern part of the state. So what we really need to do is to ensure that they have the resources, the income, the revenue, the economy that will allow them to make the payments that are necessary.
Representative, thank you. Governor, I do want to ask a quick question to clarify. You said it is not an easy topic to tackle and not an easy decision to make, but do you feel it's appropriate for the state to send state police to start policing these areas when communities are unwilling to fund it themselves?
Well, we're already doing it. So the short answer is yes, but the state police is underfunded, under budgeted, and they're stretched, right? So that's not a long-term solution unless the legislature is willing to really pump up the funding for state police. So I think if we're going to have counties, if you're going to be a county, there are certain basic services that the county needs to be able to provide. And state police is a short-term stopgap measure, but it is not the long-term answer.
All right, Governor, thank you. The next question does begin with you. What would a good transportation package contain for the next biennium? Assuming it contains a revenue component, where would you propose that revenue comes from?
Well, in the short term, I think the most likely revenue would be some kind of a gas tax increase, and I know the Transportation Coalition is looking at that. Unfortunately, that's not a long-term solution because the gas tax is bringing in less and less money as people drive less, as their vehicles are more efficient. So we need to look at a long-term answer, and I'll give you two options. We have a vehicle miles traveled pilot out there to sort of change the way we finance transportation that would capture electric vehicles and alternative fuel vehicles, which I think are going to be coming. But we need to figure out a way, in my estimation, to figure out how to attract private institutional capital to finance public infrastructure projects. We have something called the West Coast Infrastructure Exchange, which is a Oregon, Washington, California, British Columbia partnership to try to do just that. I think that the model is called Partnerships BC in Canada. They've done, I think, $10 billion of public infrastructure projects financed with private resources. So that is probably the most fruitful avenue because we can't count on the federal government to even finance the basic highway and service highway trust fund.
Governor, thank you. Representative Richardson, what would a good transportation package contain for the next biennium? Assuming it contains a revenue component, where would you propose that revenue comes from?
Infrastructure and transportation is a basic requirement of government. For instance, we need a bridge, and we have a 100-year-old bridge going across the Columbia River, and we need to have that be a priority where the legislators and the governors work together to come up with a system that's going to be able to have a project that will create a bridge and not just ensure that cronies get paid their money and that millions of dollars get wasted. We need to also focus on what are called statewide transportation improvement packages. Every region of the state has their own priorities. They need to have the funding. They need to use. They need to have the ability to have their projects funded as well. How do you do that? It's a combination of focusing on high priorities for infrastructure projects, not have them get whatever's left, and utilizing debt in a rational way, because when you're fixing a bridge, it's a long-term project. It's a capital improvement, and you need to be able to fund that sometimes using debt.
Representative, thank you. Governor, you have 30 seconds to respond.
Yeah, just one thing. I do think that by changing the contracting model, which is really what we're talking about here, you can bring these institutional dollars in. So to build a bridge right now, it's a design-build contract, right? So you get the lowest bidder. We're talking about moving to a design, build, maintain, and operate over a 30-year period, which gets you a fundamentally different kind of contract. And we have over a trillion dollar infrastructure hole along the West Coast, and we're not going to fill it unless we somehow figure out how to really aggressively create that public-private partnership and bring those dollars to bear on public infrastructure projects. It's critical to the public sector, critical to the economy.
And it requires tolling, by the way.
And it probably requires tolling.
Thank you both for the additional comments there. Representative Richardson, the next question will go to you. What ideas would you propose to assist the economic recovery in the rural counties of Oregon that are well behind in our recovery process?
It's vitally important that a governor be the ambassador for Oregon businesses. We can't just focus on Washington County and the great success they're having there. Every area of this state has attributes. Look at the aviation industry here in eastern Oregon, manned and unmanned. But it's not enough merely to have great products. You need to be able to sell those. And so a governor should be the ambassador for the aviation industry of eastern Oregon. I've organized 10 trade missions to China as a legislator. I took legislators and businesses, and we went there to help consumers in China understand that Oregon is in business and we have things that they want to buy. As a result, we brought back contracts for over $1 million that have helped companies to expand and develop. What we need to do in rural Oregon, not only deal with our natural resources, but also make sure that our products are expanded and sold internationally.
Representative, thank you. I'll repeat the question, Governor. Mm-hmm. What ideas would you propose to assist the economic recovery in the rural counties of Oregon that are well behind in the recovery process?
You know, it's been said if you've seen one Oregon county, you've seen one Oregon county. And we actually don't have a singular economy. We have a whole host of regional economies, which is why we set up the regional solutions process. We have groups in every county, including this one, that essentially prioritize community and economic development processes. And then we bring to bear state, federal, local, not-for-profit resources. We have a four-year institution coming right here as a result of a regional solutions process. The Blue Mountain Timber Project I mentioned on the east side is another example of that. So we have producing tangible results right now all across counties. We need to remember, however, that the commonality is trying to build on our natural resource infrastructure, which means investing in innovation and research for the natural resource economy. For example, marrying the Department of Forestry at OSU with the Department of Architecture at U of O to figure out how to innovate and create multi-story wood buildings and other ways to utilize this wonderful renewable resource that we have in abundance up here in the state of Oregon.
Governor, thank you. Representative, 30-second response.
If we want to bring in new money into our economies, especially into rural Oregon, then we need to be able to sell their projects. And so as far as a specific thing that could be done, out of my office budget as governor, I will establish a lieutenant governor's position whose focus will be solely on international trade, developing the relationships that we need. Oregon is a gateway to the universe, I mean, gateway to the world. And we can sell our products if we have somebody that's working to do that and has actually established offices in our various countries where we have our greatest opportunities for export.
Representative, thank you. I have to compliment both of you for staying so well on time on all of these questions. Still, we have reached the point where we are at our final question of this debate, and Governor, it begins with you. What are the first three things you will accomplish as governor that will impact the voters of Oregon on a personal level?
I will continue to expand the access to quality, affordable health care to Oregonians, which will impact them on a very personal level. Secondly, we will continue to lean into our early learning delivery system, which is going to have a huge impact on children and families before they ever get to school. And, you know, third, I'm going to implement the low-carbon fuel standard, which is going to create jobs and economic activity around the state of Oregon and begin to diversify our transportation fuel opportunities, which will, I think, bring thousands of new jobs in the state of Oregon, reduce the export of billions of dollars that we send outside the state now to bring in fossil fuel, and create jobs and better economic opportunities for people.
Governor, thank you. Representative Richardson, what are the first three things you will accomplish as governor that will impact the voters on a personal level?
First, I'm going to implement pay equality. It's not something just to be discussed, but women deserve to be paid the same as men for the same experience. The governor's office, he pays 79 cents for women for every dollar he pays to men. That's wrong. First thing I'll do as governor is to make sure that my office sets an example with equal pay for equal work and equal experience for men and women. Secondly, focus on education. We cannot continue to have an education system where when our graduation rate is second to last in the country. That is unacceptable. We're losing a generation of our youth. And so I will focus not just on getting kids to go to college, because you have 100% of your effort focused on that and 25% of the kids actually go. We need to make sure we have mentors, we have technical and professional opportunities for kids. We're using the unions and trade sectors to help provide those kinds of training for those kids that aren't going to go to college. We need mentors. Every child deserves a mentor and an education and an opportunity for a future. And finally, we're going to restore trust in our state so that the people can trust their state government and we won't continue to lose so much money.
Representative, thank you. We're running a little over time here with this question. I do want to give the governor 30 seconds to respond to that.
Well, first of all, if the charge is that my office doesn't provide equal pay for equal work, it is categorically untrue. And even the reporter whose article you used to cook these numbers has repudiated the way you have done this. It just seems to me a little cynical that you would discover equity for women after 11-year history in the legislature where very few of your votes actually suggest that you believe in that.
There you go again.
Thank you, Ronald.
Talking about the past.
Well, on that note,
present.
Gentlemen, we're going to move on to our closing statements. By the flip of the coin, Representative Richardson, you will have the first closing statements. You have 3 minutes for it, sir.
Oregon is a wonderful state. I mean, consider for a moment you and your family. Take yourself back 170 years ago, and you want an opportunity, and you hear about Oregon, a place where there's tall timber and deep soil and lots of water and land, a place where you can plant your roots and provide a legacy for your kids and grandkids. We call these people pioneers. But if you were that family and you wanted that, and you put everything you had into a wagon and you wrote on the side of it, Oregon or bust, and you start walking, 2,200 miles you walk. And why? Because you want an opportunity, a legacy of freedom for your family and for generations to come. That is what we inherited. We drink from wells we didn't dig. And yet, where are we now? We have high unemployment. We have low achievement in our schools. We have a distrust in our state and in our government. And what is the answer? It always seems to be eligibility and qualifications. We have put 300,000 more people onto health care. Well, we want everyone to have good health care, but it always seems to be subsidized health care. And then what happens when you can't get a doctor because now you've got a card, but you don't have the money to pay for your deductible, and your doctor can't treat you and give you a break on the price because he'd be breaking the law? We don't need the government to try and tell us how we should live our lives. If we want a legacy for our children, like we received from our parents and those that came before us, then we need to change the way we do business. We need to restore our state. We need to reboot our economy. We need to reform our education system so that our kids aren't next to last, but have a world-class education. That's what they deserve, and we can't afford to lose another generation. And we need to restore trust and confidence in state government. As governor, I will be a people's governor. I will reinstitute office hours. I will do what Senator Wyden is doing and go to every county, every state, every year, and have the opportunity for people all over the state to bring their questions to the governor. I want us to have a governor who will help restore confidence, look to the future, and not be focused on trying to make defenses for what's gone on in the past and hope that we can do better. I say to the governor, you've had three terms, governor, and in baseball, it's three strikes and you're out.
Representative, thank you. Governor Kitzhaber, 3 minutes for your closing remarks.
Let me start by saying this race is about two things. It's about values and it's about the ability to deliver. And values matter, and my opponent and I differ fundamentally about the values that I think are important to this great state. We differ on the issue of a woman's fundamental right to control her own reproductive health choices. We differ on the right of Oregonians to marry the person that they love. We differ on the importance of embracing Oregon's growing diversity, whether that be through tuition equity or supporting immigrant children. And we disagree on the importance of maintaining Oregon's environment and natural wonder as the foundation of both our identity and of our economy. Our state is a vastly better place now than it was 4 years ago, and that's largely due to the fact that we did not allow the Great Recession or high unemployment or a divided legislature to tear us apart. It reflects a change in the tone at the top, and it reflects leadership that has fought for and delivered for Oregonians. We came together as Oregonians over the past 4 years and found common solutions to some very, very difficult issues. We erased our budget deficit and balanced the books with bipartisanship. We set out to create 25,000 new jobs each year, and we have exceeded that goal. We've secured huge capital investments in some of our major traded sector industries, from Intel to Daimler Trucks. We've created a four-year university right here in Central Oregon, brought two data centers to Prineville, and facilitated the expansion of the Central Oregon Truck Company. We've kept timber mills open in John Day, in Umatilla, and in rural Josephine County, and we're working together to bring more water for irrigated agriculture in the Umatilla Basin. Across this state, communities are coming together, working on outcomes for kids, on kindergarten readiness, on third grade reading. We added $1 billion to our K-12 school system in the last 4 years, and we have the first tuition freeze in 14 years. And today, 95% of all Oregonians have health insurance coverage. Tens of thousands of them, for the very first time, they don't have to choose between the utility bill and taking their child to the doctor. They are happier, they are healthier, they are more productive on the job. Together we have delivered for Oregon, but we still have some serious challenges. The economic recovery has left large portions of our state behind, communities of color, people in rural parts of our state. Meeting those challenges require two things. First, it requires leadership based on values and based on the belief that we are all in this together, based on the belief that Oregon won't be a good place for any of us to live unless it's a good place for all of us to live. And second, it requires the ability to bring people together to tackle these problems as a community. We have brought our state back together over the past 4 years, and together we have delivered for Oregon. We're well down the road to a much more prosperous future, and we cannot allow ourselves to return to the divisiveness of the past. This campaign is about two things. It's about values. It's about the ability to deliver. I'm John Kitzhaber, and I'm asking for your vote on November 4th.
Governor, thank you. This is a bit of a rarity in a debate. We actually have a little bit of extra time, so I'm going to ask you each one additional question. This is somewhat off the cuff, and we'll ask you to keep to less than 30 seconds. One of the OAB members suggested this to me yesterday. Representative Richardson, can you tell us one thing that you like about your opponent in this race?
The truth is we get along fine. This is competition. He wants a fourth term. I think I could do better. And so we'll both be glad when November 5th comes, regardless of the outcome. I think John's a very affable guy. You know, I mean, I think that Kulongowski had it wrong when he was asked what is the difference between you and Governor Kitzhaber, and he said, I like people. I mean, John seems like he likes people. He's a decent guy. It's not about personalities. It's about the ability to lead, and we have a different background and a different focus on what the future is for our state.
Representative, thank you. Governor Kitzhaber, one thing you like about your opponent
in
this race?
Yeah, we're past the debate, so I'm not going to debate anymore. Dennis and I, he was one of the first people walked across to his office when I was first elected governor. We had a divided legislature, and I knew we needed to work together, and actually we worked closely, very well together. I think Dennis and Arnie Roebland and co-speaker Hannah and Peter Courtney were largely the reasons that we took what appeared to be just a toxic environment and actually made lemonade out of those lemons. So thank you for that.
Gentlemen, I appreciate you both ending here on a positive note. That does conclude our debate this morning. On behalf of the Oregon Association of Broadcasters and the voters in this great state, I want to thank both of you for being here and for everyone at home for watching, tuning in, and making an informed decision. I will remind everyone in the room and everyone watching or listening at home The last day to register to vote is October 14th. Election day, of course, is Tuesday, November 4th. Your vote does indeed matter. Thank you so much for being with us today.